Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Dennis Perkins is CEO of Syncretics Group, a consulting firm dedicated to helping leaders and teams thrive under conditions of adversity, uncertainty, and change. He's a graduate of the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis, and he successfully completed his first Sydney Hobart race in 2006. Now, the Sydney Hobart Yacht Race is among the most demanding sailing competitions in the world, and Dennis is actually the author of a new book, Into the Storm, published by AMACOM, a publishing division of the American Management Association. And this book examines the 1998 Sydney Hobart race, which proved to be the most perilous to date when a sudden and violent storm struck. Winds gusted over 100 miles per hour and monstrous 80-foot waves towered over the boat's mast. Six sailors died, and another 55 were saved in what became the largest search and rescue operation in Australia's history. In the face of turmoil and tragedy, a crew of amateur sailors piloted their tiny vessel, the AFR Midnight Rambler, not only to the finish, but to overall victory. While bigger and better yachts attempted to maneuver around the storm, Ed Saltis and his crew made the daring decision to head directly into the storm's path. Their triumph, perhaps even their survival, owes itself to an extraordinary level of teamwork and an alchemy of trust, cooperation, planning, and execution. Dennis, this is truly high adventure here. Now, what first sparked your interest in the story of the AFR Midnight Rambler? How did you get started on this?
So I had written a book that dealt with an Antarctic expedition leading at the edge that focused on an expedition of a guy named Ernest Shackleton, and I'm always looking for the next adventure. So while Leading at the Edge highlighted the role of the leader, I was interested in something that focused more on the team, and I came across a number of books about this 1998 Sydney to Hobart race. And as I did that, I discovered that almost all the books about the race had focused on the tragedy, but I believe there was a hidden gem that had been obscured, and this was the story of the Midnight Rambler.
Okay, now, if you don't mind, just give us a little bit of geographical context here. Almost everybody's familiar with Australia and Sydney in particular, but Hobart, that's in Tasmania, isn't it?
That's in Tasmania. And so the distance and the race course from Sydney, Australia to Hobart, Tasmania, is over 700 statute miles. And it's also a very tough race course I could tell you more about. But Tasmania is separated from the mainland, and the waterway in between is called the Bass Strait.
And these were amateur sailors as far as competitive racing goes. What were the really outstanding qualities that brought them through this and what was really a tragedy for the other teams?
I think that there were a number of elements. But one of the things that distinguished the Ramblers was the fact that they were completely unified as a team. Everyone on board had strengths. They also had limitations. But their mantra was make the team the rock star. Rather than focusing on individual prima donna sailors who might be the best in the world at something, these guys were absolutely committed to making the team the rock star. And so during the race, they were able to use the strengths of each other. They were able to fill in when others were exhausted, and it truly was an example of where a lot of qualified and committed guys working together can really outperform teams with individual rock stars, but where you don't have that same level of alignment.
It's interesting. You spoke about Shackleton before, and I marvel at that story. It's one of the more famous stories of failure and survival, but it's also about leadership. And a thing that doesn't get talked about much, though, is this idea of followership. Shackleton was an exceptional leader, but unless he had strong followers, people who knew their roles, people who were watching his back, that story would have turned out much differently. That really enabled him to be such a great leader. Was it a similar type of story here?
Absolutely. I think that there is a similar connection. And by the way, on Shackleton and his followers, I was on South George Island and visited his grave and also found a cairn of rocks that had been erected by his followers who were with him on his last expedition. And the Royal Marines during the War of the Falklands moved that cairn of rocks and found a scroll underneath that was a testimonial written by members of the crew. And it was really extraordinarily moving. And what came to mind for me in that instance was that the reason Shackleton had such great followership was that people knew that he would do everything in his power for them, that that was a deeply embedded value. And he would take off his mittens if he saw somebody else whose fingers looked frostbitten. And Ed Saltus and the Ramblers had a similar ethos. I mean, Ed would go out of his way to support others. He would take his first turn on the rail, taking the cold spray. And so you see some common leadership qualities in both situations. And that was one of the fascinating things about the story.
You also talk about this idea of the team pulling together, of the team actually being the star rather than a specific rock star individual here. Now, after this idea of everyone being united, what can a business audience learn about another important, let's say, team or project or leadership associated task? And that's preparation. What can you tell us about preparation as it applies to this story?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the skipper has co-owner of the boat, a guy named Bob Thomas, who's the navigator. And Bob said to me at one point, we prepare so much because we want to remove all excuses for failure. And that struck me because in their five-page checklist of going over everything on the boat, the idea of removing all excuses for failure comes through again and again. And that's true not just of the boat, but also in the way the team prepares. So they sailed at night, changing sails under the most difficult conditions. And when many other boats were coming back into the harbor, the Midnight Rambler would be going out. And so I think other teams can take a lesson from that and say, okay, let's look ahead. What could go wrong? And then what can we do to prepare for it? How can we remove all excuses for failure? So I think it's a very similar strategy in both the business world and any organization.
Well, okay, fine. Not to drop names here, but what the heck? I mean, I think he's one of the top five richest people in the world, but Larry Ellison, you know, he's the CEO of Oracle. He was a competitor in this race, and his ship, Sayonara, apparently had a very strong start. How did the Sayonara fare?
So Sayonara was built to be the fastest boat in the world, and it was much, much bigger than the Midnight Rambler, about 100 feet to the Midnight Rambler's 35. Larry Ellison had hired a number of professional sailors. Actually, half of the New Zealand America's Cup team were on the boat, so he had great sailors. There was no question that Sayonara could do well and would go fast. But the overall winner of the race is not declared on speed. I mean, that's a competition among a few boats, but it's based on handicap. What's your maximum potential? And so there were a number of occasions where there was a lack of alignment between Larry Ellison and his Rockstar crew members. And overall, they came in fifth, I think, in the race, and the Midnight Rambler took home the trophy. And so you can have a great team, but unless you have complete alignment between the leader and the team, you're not going to perform at a maximum.
How do you make the decision to head right into the storm? What can people outside of yacht racing learn from this type of high-risk calculation?
What's interesting about this decision to sail into the storm was that it was a decision based on survival, not a foolish attempt to win the race at any cost. But one of the things facing the Rambler was, hey, you've got a 35-foot boat facing these 80-foot waves. I mean, just imagine what that's like. If you turn around and you sail parallel to the waves, it's very easy to be rolled. But even if you're turning around and they're coming from the rear, you're surfing out of control down these big waves. And they knew this. And because the team was aligned, they decided to sail almost directly into the storm. Now, that meant taking the waves at about a 60-degree angle. Dead on would be 0 degrees, and you saw the perfect storm, you know that boats can pitch pole and fall backwards, but 90 degrees is not good either. So they picked the perfect angle for survival to take on these waves. But a number of other boats fell off and moved further away. And so when they had actually gotten through the storm, the Midnight Rambler was in a perfect position to win the race. The decision was made purely on a basis of what's the best survival path for the crew. And so this idea of sailing 60 degrees into the waves, up the waves, not being foolhardy and sailing straight into the waves, but at a slight angle, is a metaphor that I use all the time.
You mentioned earlier that in your research for the Shackleton book, and obviously one of the things that drives your focused curiosity about your subject matter, is that you went to South Georgia Island. Now, as far as this particular book is concerned, and also, I imagine, from a life experience, you actually did the Sydney to Hobart race, didn't you?
I did the race, yeah. I had been over to Australia a number of times. I've actually sailed and raced with the Ramblers. But the Sydney to Hobart race is such an iconic event. I felt to really authentically tell the story, I wanted to do the race. So I did the race on a boat that had sailed competitively for Norway around the world, and got a firsthand taste of what it was like down the coast of Australia into the Bass Strait. And we had some excitement. We lost all our navigation equipment by a so-called rogue wave. They all seemed to be kind of rogue to me. But there were boats that sank. There were boats that were dismasted. So I had the experience, and then I had the honor of buying a drink for the Ramblers down in Hobart, Tasmania, a famous pub called the Shipwright's Arms. So I felt I had a good taste of the experience.
In the book, you bring up a couple of interesting strategies for successful teamwork. Balanced optimism is one, and the other one is called tenacious creativity. What can you tell us about those? Is there a place where both of them can coexist in the same teams or same organizations?
Sure. Well, balanced optimism, important in any challenging situation. I got this partly from Shackleton, partly from Ed. But you have to be able to see a winning scenario. If there's no path by which the team can win, then morale is depleted, people are exhausted, they stop trying. And so one way or the other, people have to be able to see a path between where they are now and victory, whether that victory is taking home a trophy or survival, whatever that win may be. But at the same time, you've got to avoid irrational exuberance. You know, you've got to know how high the waves are. You have to know where you are and how far you have to sail. So there's an element of realism that has to be injected into that so that the optimism is grounded in reality. And the second strategy, tenacious creativity, you know, never give up, there's always another move. For me, this is a fundamental mantra that works in every situation, and it really has two elements. First is faith or belief that somewhere there is a solution that exists to the immediate problem the team is facing. And that belief causes people to have the energy to think of the next thing that they will do. And in both the Shackleton story and Midnight Rambler, they tried a lot of things that didn't work, but they eventually found things that did work. And the creativity part of that says, under the conditions least conducive to creativity, you know, whether you're stranded in Antarctica or in the middle of the Bass Strait, these big waves, you have to be able to step back, take a deep breath, and think creatively to come up with an innovation. So I think they're companion strategies, and they work together very well.
And just as a concluding question, obviously in the vicinity of Australia or Tasmania, the cultures are so different, the behavior is so different. And what insights do you have into that culture as it relates to this rather exceptional display, not only in the race, but in the search and rescue actually associated with collaboration and teamwork?
Well, it's interesting. I tracked down one of the pararescue people who went down in these waves. And by the way, these waves at times with the helicopters were 100 feet high. One helicopter pilot had to climb from a hover of 100 feet in order to miss the wave. So you have people like Christy McAllister, the pararescue people, who are willing to go down into those waves and pull people off stricken boats. And, you know, it's that ability to give it a go. I mean, yes, there is individualism, but ultimately that Aussie spirit of being willing to give it a go is pretty impressive. And there is a steely, quiet toughness that you may not see all the time, but it's absolutely there and it's part of the culture of Oz.
We've been speaking to Dennis Perkins, and he's the author of an amazing book entitled Into the Storm. Dennis, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
It's great to be with you.
We have a special gift for our loyal Edgewise listeners, a free copy of an ebook entitled AMA Business Bootcamp. In it, we have assembled the most critical must-have skills for managers and leaders. To download your copy, simply visit our website, amanet.org/bootcamp. That's amanet.org/BOOTCAMP. This free download will be available until November 1st, 2013. So get your copy now.
Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.